Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back for another interesting conversation with an interesting person. Today, the part of interesting person is being played by my friend Eric Kershot. Eric is a credited actor on IMDb, a regular backup singer for Josh Groban, and a two-time Chicago marathoner. He's way more interesting than I am. But he also builds HR communities, talks incessantly about the DISC personality assessments, and believes in the power of meaningful connection to shape lives and transform careers. Eric, how are you, my friend?
D. Fish, I am thrilled to be with you today. I'm doing very well.
I love it. And I also love that I am drinking a wonderful beer from our sponsor. We got a new one for the next couple of episodes. Our good friends over at Beguile Brewing, Beguile up on the north side of Chicago. I've been drinking their beer for years, so it's great to have them on the show. Today, I am drinking the Oatmeal Stout. And if you are a regular listener, you know that the darks are something I'm passionate about, and I'm fired up to be drinking this. And I know it's actually the basis of their Imperial Pajamas, which is not only a great name for a band, it is their barrel-aged oatmeal stout, which is delicious as well. So thank you, Beguile, and cheers to you. But Eric, here's my question for you. Why do people need proper context when building relationships and building their career, and not just more content? What is the power of context when we build relationships with each other?
Before we go into that question in particular, I have to tell you the great coincidence that lies in the fact that I have a bottle of Imperial Pajamas in my refrigerator right now.
You know, and that is freaky. So, Beguile, your sponsorship going even farther than you thought. So that is, well, I'll be over in a little bit. We can share that, but this is going to be delicious.
I love that you mentioned that, and I'm jealous that you have one. So good to go there.
Very, very good.
Great question to start out with. So I'm a firm believer, as you've already mentioned, in meaningful connection, meaningful relationships. And, you know, I belong to a number of associations and various groups that bring people together to have conversations and build these meaningful relationships. And it has been my experience that these groups really are focused on the context side of things, or rather the content side of things. You know, what can we have people talking about, and how can we reimagine what people are discussing and come up with, you know, innovative and exciting and sexy new programming to give people new things to discuss? And I believe really strongly that it isn't necessarily the content that people are focused on, that to the point you made initially, it really is the context of these conversations. If people come together and they want to connect meaningfully with one another, and I do a lot in the professional networking, human resources space. You know, if people, HR professionals, come together and they really want to connect with one another, they aren't necessarily looking for something new to discuss. They may have the same questions and challenges and issues that HR professionals have had for decades, even, you know, but
right. People haven't changed much, right?
Right. And unfortunately, in some ways, the HR profession hasn't changed much. But there are people who do want it to change. And anyway, they're coming together, not necessarily to redefine the content of what they're sharing, but sometimes to share the stuff that's been important for decades in a new context.
Sorry to interrupt, but like, so help me define context in this place. Cause I think I agree with you. But let's clarify this a little bit. So like, what is, use associations, because, you know, all of us, not all, but most of us are involved in some sort of organization or club or association, you know, that professionally, maybe personally. So we go to these meetings, we go to these conferences, we go to the you know, the breakfast meeting for the month or the big national conference. And you're right. A lot of times it's kind of the same stuff over and over again. How do we change the context or give a more, as you would say, meaningful context to those conversations?
I have to preface my response by saying that I'm someone who identifies as being on the introverted side of things. And if okay. your audience is familiar with introversion, you know, there's a lot that goes with it. But I will just say, speaking from my own perspective, that there was a while where I was attending a number of professional networking events, and I never felt like I was truly connecting with folks in the way that I wanted to. You know, I'd come okay. home with a stack of business cards, you know, and I had had some great discussions, or maybe I attended a panel discussion, you know, but a lot of the conversation really ended up feeling very one way, okay. that I was being spoken to. And I was glad for the information that I was learning and people were sharing their expertise, but I longed to be able to give back. And honestly, even as an attendee, be the one that was, helping somebody else and supporting somebody else at the event and have it be more of a dialogue than what I was experiencing, and a meaningful dialogue, not just, again, coming home with a stack of business cards. And so, you know, along the way, I was listening to other people and asking that question, you know, in what environment do you want to come together to connect with people? First of all, do you believe it's possible to connect meaningfully in a professional networking event? And if so, you know, how would you prefer to do that? And what I kept hearing from people time and time again is that they wanted a peer-oriented conversation. So there's value okay. in a subject matter expert in a panel, but they wanted to come together with their peers who were struggling with very similar things and just brought a different perspective
right.
on their challenges. Now, suddenly it isn't the subject matter and the expert in the room that's important. It's the fact that you're in an environment with others who are also failing at the things that you're failing at and
right.
experiencing similar successes. And now you're able to link arms around the same old content in ways that you may not have been able to do before. So that's what I mean when I talk about, you know, just a slightly different context to the same issues and challenges that we have faced for years.
Well, and I like what you're saying there, because I think it's really, even maybe to go a little further, it's in some way, shape, or form giving the participant in that conversation some ownership and some engagement in that conversation, right? To that point about the subject matter expert, and I say this knowing that I am often the subject matter expert mm-hmm. at these meetings, so don't ignore me completely, but the idea being allowing people to become an active participant in that, or, you know, as opposed to just, you know, a passive receptacle,
an
right?
active participant, but also with the permission and encouragement to be vulnerable. You know, it's not like, hey, I have all the answers, you don't, you know, let me share with you and maybe even get your feedback. But just remember, I'm still the one with all the answers.
right.
It's kind of leaving that conversation, and there's still value there. Of course, I'm painting a caricature here, but instead it's transitioning over to a space where you and I come together and maybe I do have more experience, or maybe I have been in the industry longer. But instead of approaching you as the subject matter expert, I'm coming to you and saying, hey, you know, we bring different perspectives, different experience, different levels of expertise to this challenge or question. What can you learn from me? What can I learn from you? And how can this be a meaningful dialogue? And I think when you walk away from that type of discussion, you just feel different.
Absolutely. Well, even something you said before, I think is valuable is just that difference of perspective, right? Because you could even have two people in at the same level, in, you know, working on the same problems in relatively similar organizations, but they're just two different people, right? So they're going to have a different background, a different outlook, and a different perspective that they're applying to their challenges. So when those two people have a conversation, you know, I'm pretty sure at least one or two times during that conversation, one of them will be like, oh, I never thought of that. That's a great idea. I should try that.
Exactly right. I know, for example, that you and I both have experience with coaching and masterminds, you know, and mm-hmm. I have plenty to say on both topics, but I guarantee if I come and sit in on one of your, your mastermind events, your mastermind conversations. I'm going to pick up tips and tricks, ways that you facilitate, how you encourage your participants to engage in the conversation that may have never crossed my mind. And, you know, it's just, I just can't help but think that that perspective at any level is just so valuable.
For sure. And vice versa. If I was hanging out, I know I'd pick stuff up from you. And that's, I think that's very affirming for people when, as you said, they can have to be given permission to do that though, right? Like learn from your peers, learn from everybody, not just a person who's standing in the front of the room. And I think part of it's because I think a lot of organizations, they think the ego of the person in the front of the room will be hurt if if they say, oh no, you can learn from your peers as well. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to kind of open that up a little bit.
I mentioned this, that I moderated an event in particular, and it was a panel discussion. And I don't remember if this sort of just hit me on the spot or if I planned it going in. But, you know, typically you would have the audience ask the panelists questions because that's what they're there for, to answer questions and share their experience. And I flipped it around and I asked the panelists to ask the audience questions. And, you know, we still had a very meaningful conversation, but it changed the dynamic a little bit. Now, you know, the throngs of people who were there to learn from the panelists had become subject matter experts in their own way. You know, and I don't want to belabor the point, but I can't help but think, and I hope that it changed the experience for people, that now suddenly instead of, you know, six people that were there in the front of the room for you to learn from, now there were, you know, dozens, you know, 100 plus people there that could potentially mentor you, you know, teach you, guide you in some way. And they don't have to have an official title, you know, mm-hmm. or walk around and, you know, with a particular name tag. It's just by virtue of being together with other people who have different life experiences, you have something to learn.
Come on. I want the sexy name tag with like the 10 ribbons on it. Although that is a very brave experience or venture for you. Cause as somebody who has experience, moderating panels, if you ask the entire audience for advice, you know, there's that one person who thinks they should be up there on the panel who's going to give you all their advice. I mean, they'll figure out how to like give advice while asking questions, even at a regular panel.
Right.
I wanted to actually go back and ask you something else. Not that I plan on talking to you about networking, but you know, a topic very near and dear to my heart, obviously. You've used the word meaningful and meaningful connection a couple times, and I think that's really important. But what do you mean by meaningful? So, you know, when you're going out and networking, what is a meaningful connection? What should you be striving for? Because I think a lot of people really, they struggle with creating what I think we'd call a meaningful connection because they don't even know what they're striving for. They think that showing up and getting business cards is the win. And, you know, when they realize nothing comes from it, they go, oh, well, networking doesn't work or relationships in business aren't valuable. And then they stop. Right. Mm-hmm. So when you think meaningful, what does that mean to you?
I'm so glad you picked up on that. That's one of the words that really resonates with me. And I'm trying even today to figure out new ways to incorporate it into the language that I use and into the communication pieces that I put out on social media. Meaningful to me is almost the opposite of transactional.
Okay.
I'm coming up with this right now. So if this isn't as well thought out as it could be, then my apologies, but
you know, trust me, you aren't the only one pulling things out of their rear on this podcast. I've been doing it for years.
You know, the professional networking events that just rubbed me the wrong way, I felt were just transactional in a superficial way. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted something more relational. You know, want to sit down with you and get to know you as a person. You know, I want to get beyond what you do, you know, what your title and your company is, and understand why you do it. Actually, that's one of the things that I encourage other people to do. And when you're starting a conversation with someone you've just met, instead of asking, what do you do? Ask, why do you do what you do?
Oh, I love it.
You're not asking a scripted question, so you're not getting a scripted answer, and people stop and they think about it and they look a little uncomfortable, but whatever follows is going to be so much more interesting. So meaningful to me is getting to know you as a person beyond what your title is, why you do what you do, what makes you tick. you know, stuff that you're just not used to sharing. Not that I'm, you know, going to make you vulnerable in some way that you don't want to be, but I want to open up our conversation to go beyond what you would typically expect to discuss at a networking event, so that when I go home, I don't have a stack of 50 business cards of 50 superficial conversations. I go home with three
right.
business cards from three solid, meaningful conversations where when I tell you I want to follow up and have a coffee, not that I'm a coffee drinker, but still, I want to, like, I really want to, instead of coming right. home with having made all these promises to people about, you know, getting together, and I have no interest. There's nothing about our conversation really compelled me to want to follow up, but I said it because that's just what you do. It's formulaic.
And to your point, the reason it sounds like you'd say I don't want to follow up with them is not because you don't like them, but because you don't even have enough information to make a decision whether you like them or not.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
Like you've right. gotten to know them. Right.
For the vast majority of the people that I meet are fantastic. You know, there's sure. something worth getting to know there, but if I haven't begun to get to know them, or the conversation just went so too quickly to something transactional, like I can do this for you, or what can you do for me? Instead of how can we just get to know each other almost as friends first, instead of as professional connections or colleagues,
yep.
you know, not that suddenly, you and I are going to movies left and right, but like, if I want to get to know you as a friend,
mm-hmm.
that relationship is going to be so much less transactional because I care about who you are. I care about the challenges you're facing. I care about wanting to serve you and support you in some way that goes beyond, you know, your value to me and my business.
Right. Well, Eric, I just had you on the podcast so you could just say everything that I believe and that I talk about when networking comes up. But me not having to say it. So thank you.
No problem.
I appreciate that. But I mean, I'm 100% with you. And I, you know, I've always looked at, you know, networking kind of in the same way. It's relational. It is, you know, anybody who thinks networking is a one-off thing. I often say networking is a process, not an event, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's something, you know, it's also a lifestyle choice. You gotta look at this as the long term. And so I love what you say there about meaning, you know, creating that meaningful connection. It's really just connecting with the person as a human being, right? As a person. You don't have to be their best friend, but you have to acknowledge that they are more than just a job title and an email address at a company.
And I think one of the biggest obstacles is we're so focused on what we need in a mm-hmm. networking conversation. You're there because you need a job, you know, or you need an introduction, or you need a client. And in the, you know, I actually do a workshop around this, around professional networking, especially for introverts who sometimes have a harder time of it or don't believe that they're as capable of networking in ways that other people are. And the image that comes to mind for me is sort of like a path in the woods. Like if you're walking, you know, down this path in the woods and it bends and you can't see where it goes, imagine being so distracted by what you can see in the foreground, you know, the trees, the, you know, what's directly in front of you, that you lose sight of the fact that your goal when you're networking professionally is whatever's around that bend, around the corner, but you can't always see what that is. Right.
Right.
So it's almost like an act of faith that establishing a meaningful conversation with you today in the 20 minutes that we have, getting to know about you, putting the spotlight on you, will eventually take us to a point where I'm having my needs met. Right. You want to help
yep.
me because you like how I've approached the conversation. So you reach back out to me and say, hey, you've kept the focus on me for so long. What can I do to help you get a job? It kind of happens. It takes care of itself. Zig Ziglar and others talked about the universal law of reciprocity that says if you help enough other people get what they want, you will get what you want. But yet we're so distracted by those things that we want and that we need that we kind of doom ourselves from the very beginning. My first words to you are, you know, if I need a job, oh, I'm unemployed and I'm looking for a job. Who can you connect me with?
Well, there's
nothing about that makes you want to get to know me.
Yeah. Well, we can smell desperation a mile away. Right. And it's not a sexy scent. I often suggest to people, and it sounds so counterintuitive, unfortunately, to most, but the best time to network, the best time to establish these relationships is exactly when you think you don't need to. I remember telling a friend who had gotten a new job, and I was like, great, start networking for your next one. And he was like, wait, what? And I'm like, you might not get that next job for 5, 10, 15 years from now, but right now you don't need it.
Yeah.
And then that actually allows, I feel, for you to come from that place of generosity, because you don't have to worry. You know, they say the best time to dig a well is before you're thirsty.
Yeah, that's a great point. I was happily employed for 16 years in a corporate HR job and decided to leave that job that I loved to become self-employed. And I had not along the way tended in any way to my professional network. I was not active on LinkedIn. I wasn't attending networking events. And so the day that I transitioned into my small business and most needed that network in place, I didn't have it because I hadn't planted those seeds. And I know, Stephen Covey talks a lot about this as well, but I was so focused on what I felt was just, a stable, consistent job where why would I network? What is the goal? What would be the reason for me to spend any time, you know, putting myself in a room full of people I don't know and might not want to get to know in the first place? Yep. And then I transitioned into my own small business and I thought, oh, that's why.
This is why you need it. Oh, right. Yeah. I tell young professionals all the time, I say, hey, you've got an advantage that your more experienced colleagues don't have, which is just time. Mm-hmm. And even if it's to your point, starting that relationship. And this is where I talk about social media and LinkedIn and digital communication specifically for this reason, the idea of using it as a way to just stay in touch in a very light way, because you never know if it's 5, 10 years down the line when you need something, or conversely, they might need something and you might be able to help them.
Yeah.
But instead of just starting from scratch, you have that 10-year relationship. Even if, as you said, you're not best friends going to the movies, you at least have that shared knowledge that you've both been in each other's sphere of influence for a decade, right?
Yeah.
It's why if somebody called me up and was like, hey, I knew you in college, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I kind of remember you were a friend of a friend, but still that's 20 years ago. So I'm like, all right, you've been in my world, in my sphere of influence 20 years. Mm-hmm. I'll talk to you.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important. But by the way, I don't pick fights, but tell me about being an introvert. Cause I'm known for having a chapter in one of my books where I kind of call out what I think is some of the myths of introversion. And it's just become really sexy lately to be like, I'm an introvert. I'm an introvert entrepreneur. I'm an introvert professional. I'm an introvert executive. And I think it's gone a little overboard, but like when you say like I'm an introvert, what does that mean to you? And how does that influence how you build relationships? Does it? Or, you know, what has that done for you in your kind of approach to building these relationships?
Yeah, and I don't want to claim to speak certainly for all introverts, and I entirely agree with you that there are especially misconceptions around introversion. You know, there's some people and even assessments that would lead you to believe that, you know, you're either fully introverted or you're fully extroverted, you know, and there is a spectrum, and there's this ambivert term, and we are all on the spectrum. I mean, even the people who first coined the terms, Carl Jung and others, said that there's no such thing as no such person as someone who is 100% on one end or the other, you know, that person
right.
wouldn't exist. So we're all on that spectrum to some extent. And a lot of it comes down to, and I'm sure you're familiar with this and others, you know, where you get your energy, what motivates you, what depletes you. I would say, personally speaking, that what energizes me really is time to myself, to think, to clarify my thoughts, to be away from what I see sometimes is chaos in the environment, you know, in the form of lots of other people, especially those yep. that I don't know, you know, and there's some sort of, there's a biological and physiological basis to this as well. People who identify as being introverted are often much more easily, stimulated physiologically. And so they look to separate themselves from what they perceive as stimulation in their environment, you know, namely the center of attention, the spotlight, being with people that they don't know and being on the spot to be able to articulate their thoughts in a way that they haven't prepared sufficiently to do.
Right.
Whereas people who identify as being more extroverted are physiologically much more, much less easily stimulated biologically, and look to rectify that, you know, by finding stimulation in their environment in different ways.
Right. I'm with you.
You with me so far? This seems to make sense.
Well, no. So what's interesting is what you're sharing is actually, when I do talk with, you know, with other people or in front of audiences, even just, you know, having a conversation, that idea of introversion as where you get your energy from makes a ton of sense to me.
Yeah.
And by the way, you, listeners may or may not believe this, I'm completely an introvert. Mm-hmm. I say I'm an introvert with highly developed social skills. but I think what happens, and it's something you just alluded to, is that we've taken this idea of introversion, meaning I'm shy and I can't, you know, be bothered to be in a social environment at all. Right. And so I think what happens is that people then use it as a definition of personality to not do things that are admittedly maybe uncomfortable or challenging. Mm-hmm. But it becomes a limiter versus a way to go, oh, I need to navigate that. So like, for example, you know, I speak at conferences for a living, so that sometimes I'm sitting in or standing in a room full of 100 people I don't know and I've never met before and we'll probably never meet again, but I have to go work the room. Like, I know that, and my wife knows, like, when I come home from a conference, like, the last thing I need to do is be around people.
Right.
Because I got to recharge. I recharge in the quiet.
Yeah.
For sure.
And people who are more extroverted claim to recharge by being with other people. The way I put it sometimes is the very thing that energizes one de-energizes or depletes the energy of the other. And so if I'm most energized by spending time by myself, you know, clarifying thoughts, I'm being able to recuperate in some way, because introverts are energy savers and extroverts mm-hmm. tend to be energy spenders. You know, I'm energized by spending that time by myself, you will find that people who identify as being extroverted say that that is something that is not attractive to them, that they're going to reach a point where they're like, oh my gosh, I just need to talk to people. I need to connect with others, but
I am so bored,
you know? And then likewise, I don't want to be misunderstood. Like I facilitate events and I speak like you do. And there's something uniquely rewarding and energizing about, you know, getting up in front of a room full of people and sharing whatever I have to share for a couple of hours. But at the end of that event, I'm probably exhausted. I have used up every last amount of energy that I've saved up, you know, for that event. And I need nothing more than to spend time by myself, go for a walk, go for a long, you know, car ride home, sit on the couch with my wife and not say anything for 10 minutes, whatever it is. The greatest misconception, and I'm so glad you brought this up, is, and there's no easier way to offend somebody who identifies as being introverted, is to say that that person is going to be shy or antisocial. And those terms have their basis in, you know, fear, you know, just sort of a different, mm-hmm. different side of things than introverted. And there are shy introverts, but there are also shy extroverts. So they can't be used synonymously. I'm blanking on the woman's name that should come so easily to mind, who talks about Susan Cain, who wrote the book Quiet. She even clarified on a podcast I listened to recently from Adam Grant, saying, you know, there's this misconception that, you know, extroverts want to connect with other people and introverts are antisocial and they don't want to. She said, everybody draws energy from other people. She said, I don't mm-hmm. think enough time is spent talking about, you know, to what extent, you know, how much connection and what type of connection. But it's not as though introverts are, you know, burying their head in the sand and locking themselves in a closet, you know, and shunning society. that's not happening. Introverts have a different way of connecting with others. And, you know, the sooner that we acknowledge that and appreciate that and position introverts then to do their best work in the environments in that appeal most to them and vice versa for extroverts, you know, that is the time that we're really going to begin to get the most out of people and out of our relationships.
Perfect. I don't think we could say anything else better on introversion. So let's talk beer. I've pretty much given up on trying to have slick transitions and
no, just jump right to it.
The podcast. Speaking of being comfortable in social situations, beer. So what have you been drinking lately that's interesting to you? Like, what's your style of I believe you are a craft beer fan as well. If you've got an Imperial Pajama sitting in your refrigerator, I'm assuming you like some of the dark stuff. Like, where do you tend to go?
I do. And actually, that's what really got me into craft beer is realizing, oh, porters and stouts, there's a lot of flavor here. This might be something to consider.
Do you remember like what the first ones were that kind of made you like notice?
I mean, honestly, one of the things that really rocked my world was Bourbon County Stout.
Oh yeah. You know,
now you're getting into the barrel aged stuff, of course. And I was drinking darker stuff before that. I mean, everybody was getting excited about Guinness and I'm like, okay, I'll give you the flavor there, but I wanted something that had more heft to it. You know,
Guinness doesn't have a lot of, I mean, and heck, I've been to the Guinness Brewery, I think 3 times. It's like my Mecca.
Oh, good for you.
I've got a brother that lives over there. So it's a good excuse to visit Ireland. But he lives in Ireland, by the way, not in the Guinness Brewery. That would be a whole different story. But and by the way, it does taste different in Ireland. It's
That's
amazing.
What I've heard.
I think a lot of Americans who are used to, you know, the big kind of American lagers, yeah, they drink a Guinness. They're like, oh my gosh, it's so much, you know, weightier than this weak, you know, beer flavored water that I've been drinking. But when you really get into it, Guinness isn't that heavy of a beer.
Not at all. I think it's very easy to drink, very flavorful, you know, and now you got the nitrogen, right? Isn't it like the nitrogen bubbles and all that business?
Yep.
There's value to all that. And one of my friends, one of my closest friends, he will jump right to the dark stuff. You know, even if we were planning a few hours of the stuff, he'll jump right to that and drink that through the evening. I love it. I think it's so flavorful, but I like to end my evenings, you know, with the heavier, darker stuff.
Okay. So you're going to go up the spectrum.
Yeah. I mean, if, you know, if I'm planning for the long haul, it's going to be probably more something of a Belgian wit, you know, a wheat beer.
Okay.
Blue Moon was my go-to for a while. We got Goose Island 312. We got, just a number of lighter but still flavorful beers. And if I want to like really play around a little bit, like recently it's been sours and wild ales. And
oh, wow. Okay. You're getting out there.
Some experimental stuff that, experimental is a strong word, but like playing with ingredients in a way that brings out, I mean, flavors that you just would never have expected to taste in a beer. I really enjoy that. As long as it's not too over the top, you know, if it gets too fruity, you know, then
right.
I think there's still value in fruit. But, you know, like I remember having a couple along the way where I was like, that's more like a Bartles and James wine cooler.
Oh, right. One of those. Yeah, definitely. You get those at, I think, kind of the end of the summer where you're just, yeah, that's more raspberry than beer. I'm not sure.
Well, like shandies. I mean, I don't want to dog shandies, but like I have a harder time. Now, granted, I have friends that say you spend all day cutting your grass. A shandy is like perfect. I get that. That makes sense.
That's what high life is for, right? So like I do think, and I've talked about this with other guests, like everybody who enjoys good craft beer, and I'm going to ask you what yours is in a second because I think you have one. Like we do still have that one kind of easy go-to, right? Where, you know, maybe one of the big boys. I mean, for me, it's High Life or a Schlitz. Happily drink it. Do you have one? Do you have like a big boy where it's you're in Chicago, it's an 85 degree barbecue. Like Guinness is not going to cut it. Or maybe it will because you're just a champ like that. I don't want to, you know, presuppose too much. Are there any of the crappy beers that you don't mind drinking? It's a safe space here, Eric. It's a safe space.
I'm going to say it's hard for me to do the typical big name stuff. You know, I think fall back to anything, and I don't even mean fall back in a negative way, but really it's going to be like a Blue Moon and a 312. You know,
okay, so you start which are actually really common, especially in the summertime. Those wits are you're pretty easy to find.
I still want flavor to it, I just never really got into. I mean, if we can name names like, you know, Bud Light and Miller Light and Coors and some of that stuff, and I think there's a place for it, you know, and I think that there are certain celebrations that call for those things, especially if you have like familial or geographically oriented affinities for these. Like you go to Milwaukee, there are very specific beers you're going to.
Well, I mean, you may not know this, but that's where I grew up. So, yes, there's a reason why I drink my High Life and my Schlitz, and you know.
And I just recently I went to the Miller Coors Brewery. It was a fantastic experience. I love brewery tours. I eat them up, you know, and I'll go anywhere just to learn about what they do and how they do it. But when it comes to, you know, what I'm going to typically want in my glass, it's going to be something that I define at least as having a little bit more flavor, maybe, you know, a smaller reach. Maybe it's something that's brewed locally, you know, and you have to get to the back of some industrial park to find to find the brewery.
Where all the good breweries are. I mean, I love local beers. I love when I travel, and you might do this too, especially if you're traveling for work, finding that local brewery and trying their stuff. It's the first time I had, and I never pronounce it right, Schaefly. It's a St. Louis brewery. First time was actually down in St. Louis. I'm like, oh, this is right by my hotel. Like, ah, this is great. And now, of course, I can find it up here, which is even better. I think you mentioned you liked Oktoberfest.
This was the year for Oktoberfest for me. It's not that I hadn't had, you know, Oktoberfests before, but like this is the year that I think I really appreciated.
They're getting so good, and there's so many now, like in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you learn like I also like what's behind it. You know, like Oktoberfest, I think, is typically a Märzen beer, which I think has to do with the word March in German. And that's where they start brewing it. And it's ready in September. Like, that's the most misleading thing of all of it, is that Oktoberfests are September beers. Like, that confused me. So, like, I say this was my year because last year, September rolled or October rolled around. I'm like, all right, good. Let's go find all the Oktoberfests. And then they were gone.
Well, you could find some on like clearance. Cause it was already on to the next ones. I had friends go to Oktoberfest a few years ago and I was like, wait, when are you leaving? Mm-hmm. No, but it's September to October. They're like, yeah, Oktoberfest isn't in October. I was like, all right, mind blown. But I'm such a huge fan of the Martins, the Oktoberfest. And I think part of it for me is I love seasonal beers just because there's like an appreciation, you know, whether it's the early summer Kolsches or the Oktoberfest or the winter ales, you're just like, all right, this is the time of year. I'm going to enjoy this. And then we're going to move on to the next one.
And there's something that I think one of my, like when I travel, you know, like when in Rome, you know, do as the Romans do, drink whatever they brew locally. And so whenever I travel, one of the first places I'll go to, this makes me sound like I have a problem here, which I don't believe I have.
Podcast called Beer Beats in Business. Don't worry. There's no judgment here.
But I'll find the local breweries, you know, and I'll say, whatever it is, even if it's something that I don't think I'm going to love, I want to try it because I want to know what you do well. You know, what you try here. And my wife and I were fortunate enough to have a belated honeymoon a couple summers ago in South Africa. Great beers in South Africa. You want to know the most expensive beer on the menu at one of the nicer restaurants we went to?
If you say Miller, I'm going to be upset.
No, I'm going to say Corona.
Corona. Well, it's an import.
Because of how far it took to get there, you know, and so they were charging twice as much for that as they were for some of the stuff that was brewed locally. But, you know, it's just, I got my wife from wines into beers through ciders. And then she had a beer along the way. Now suddenly I'm blanking on what it was, but she's like, yeah, okay, I get it. Like there's flavor here that I didn't understand beers could have. And so now whenever we travel, she's the one looking for the local breweries and finding flights for us to order, which I just think is fantastic.
That is a woman that you hold on to for sure. All right. We could keep diving down this rabbit hole, but I think that's probably a good time to actually wrap up, especially because we're going to have you on again. I want to talk about your acting credit on IMDb for sure.
You like how I put that out there just to tease you a little bit?
Yeah, it's a good tease. But Eric, I always ask all of my guests at the end of our conversation, what's a piece of advice that you'd give somebody to help them have a better day today?
This is probably the first time I've mentioned this on a podcast. I usually have a different go-to, but it is live your day interacting with other people as though they have a sign above them that says, make me feel special. So rather than what's something you can do for yourself, this is something that is something that you can do for other people. And I think if you make enough other people feel special, your day is going to turn around something significant.
I think that's a Mary Kay Ash idea, and I love it. Thank you for sharing that. That's perfect. If people want to follow up with you, Eric, what's the best place for them to get in touch with you?
I do a lot on LinkedIn, Eric Kershot, and I'm sure the spelling will be in your show notes on LinkedIn. HarmonyInsights.com is my primary Perfect. Company website. And then we have, I run an HR mastermind group called HR Hot Seat. So HRHotSeat.com will take you to all things human resources networking related.
Awesome. Love it. And also I have been loving this flannel pajamas, and I have approximately half a thumb left in my glass. So that's been delicious. And it is I said flannel pajamas is the base for the Imperial pajamas, which I know is out again. They don't always have it, but it's going to be out for a little while. So make sure you check out that Imperial pajamas. Beguile Brewery. I know they distribute all throughout Chicago, Illinois. I think they're around Lake Michigan as well. So definitely check them out if you're in any of those areas. And if not, go find a beer exchange website and get some, because you'll enjoy it and you'll say thank you. But thank you to Beguile for sponsoring us. And everybody, it has been an absolute pleasure. Hope you enjoy this conversation. Make sure you tell your friends and rate us on whatever your pod app of choice is. And we will see you next time. Of course, I mean that completely figuratively. Have a great day. Bye.
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. We all know the best way to find out about a new podcast is through our friends. So please help us out and share what we're doing through social media, or just tell someone. And if you could do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Stitcher, that would be great. Want to get in on the conversation? Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.